You've got a friend in me. You've got a friend in me. When the road looks rough ahead and you're miles and miles from your nice warm bed, you just remember what your old pal said. Son, you've got a friend in me. Yeah, you've got a friend in me.
And welcome back to You've Got a Friend in Me, brought to you by the Top 40 in Casey Kasem. Oh, remember Casey Kasem?
I also remember Robert Goulet singing You've Got a Friend in Me from Toy Story 2.
You got trouble.
Wow. You got troubles, Dave. I've got them too.
He was a good singer, but he sounds pretty good.
There is nothing that I wouldn't do for you.
Oh, thank you very much. And this is 1480 AM KPHX Breakthrough Entertainment. I'm Dave Isaac, alongside Joseph J. Erdo, Craig Isaac, Eric Reinert, and Trisha. And this is a great song.
Toy Story 2.
Tom Hanks.
You missed the first version of it.
I loved the first version. That
at
was
the top of the show.
That you guys opened the show with. I loved it. Great job.
Yes. We got to make sure, like some of the successful actors with their money, that you explore how to reduce your taxes for all eligible companies, schools, and municipalities. And this is business owner tax relief. So be sure to check them out online, azbotr.com. Give them a call, 623-888-3210, 623-888-3210.
You've got a friend in Conrad.
I do.
You do?
Nice guy.
Nice.
He is, actually. Very nice.
There isn't anything he wouldn't do for you.
Yeah.
Well, hey, if he saves you money on your taxes, that's probably the best thing anybody can do for us.
We've got a friend in him.
Let him do anything he wants.
No, Uncle Sam is not a friend.
Oh, what?
Wouldn't mind being friends with Bryce Dallas Howard.
I could arrange that, by the way.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't want to get stuck in the friend zone.
Well, then why did you just say it?
Oh, I don't know. I was hoping.
Maybe
it was
that's
like a
part of your problem. Entryway.
I don't know. It might be a problem, but I absolutely gave Inside Out a thumbs up. This is Breakthrough Entertainment's Pixar show. Trisha, you gave Inside Out
also a thumbs up because it pointed out the necessity of having balance within our emotions so that we can appreciate each and every one of them.
So that's something to be very joyful of, that Inside Out got two thumbs up. But, you know, I'm a little sad that Dave gave it a thumbs down.
Aww.
But I like the balance of emotions. I give that a thumbs up.
And we need to
just
hear...
not the movie.
Closer. But we need to hear a little bit about the real life story behind emotions. We're going to find out if joy really is voiced by Amy Poehler. We have on behavioral science department
you have
chair.
Doubt?
What?
Is there doubt in your mind?
Doubt in my mind that Amy Poehler is voiced by... Well, in my mind, I don't know if I can't hear. It's... I don't.
Well,
I,
your voice is
I'm
a little high
anger.
When you're joyful, so maybe it is.
That's
maybe
true.
Sort of a legend in your own mind.
It might say, yeah. sounds like Tina Fey. I don't know. Behavioral Science Department Chair Kristen Lee Costa, Northeastern University, is on the phone joining us for this very emotional segment. How are you, Kristen?
Hi, everyone. I'm doing great. I'm here in Boston, and I hope everyone's well there.
Oh, we're doing great.
We're hot.
We're about 117 degrees. How's it out there?
Ooh. It's a little cooler than that, thankfully, but our snow has melted, so we're grateful.
Excellent.
Wow. Well, and your summers are very, very humid as compared to our summers are dry, so it doesn't doesn't quite feel like you would think 117 would feel.
Yeah, I've been to Phoenix a couple of times,
yes,
and I
it
love
does.
It.
Excellent.
Like going into a dry sauna.
It really is. Therapeutic.
Yes.
So, you know, I think that you're a great guest to tell us a little bit about the behind the scenes of our emotions and our memories. Tell us a little bit about your background in that area.
Sure. Well, I'm a clinical social worker by training. And as you said, I'm the lead at Northeastern University for Behavioral Sciences. So I spent my life both as a practitioner and a researcher understanding our emotions. And as you've been talking about, you know, the upside, you know, ways in which we can leverage them in helpful ways, and then also the ones that can be dark and difficult to navigate. And so I've spent a lifetime being a therapist as a clinician, and then also, like I said, teaching students how to navigate it as well.
You know, and you know, we want to hear like a various aspects of this, but I'm going to get right to the heart of it. Trisha was talking about it a few segments ago. The message and moral for Inside Out is, you know, all of our emotions have to work in harmony. You can't just like get rid of anger or fear or sadness, right?
That's right. And I watched the movie yesterday, and it really does teach that lesson about how we can embrace all sides of our emotion, even the ones that seem like they're dark or disgusting. We really have to know that they work together, as you said, in a harmonious fashion. and they serve a unique purpose. So whether it's joy or anger or curiosity or fear or shame or guilt, they all have a role.
Yeah, it kind of, you know, like they were showing how fear can protect us from injuring ourselves or hurting ourselves, and how it's important to have that balance. Now, what we find in many, many people these days, and probably many of your clients, is when these emotions get out of balance. And of course, this was focused on you know, prepubescence for females, and we all know that with the hormonal changes, the emotions are just like a roller coaster. What would you say is your take-home message, other than the necessity of balance from this?
Well, I think the notion of balance is an important one, and as you've said, difficult emotions can protect us. And I think that a lot of times conventional wisdom tells us, you know, we want to squash our emotions when they're hard. But like you said, they can definitely, you know, serve us well and prevent us from living with reckless abandon. One of my big takeaways, and I think it was not, you know, just I love the Pixar, the imagery is so beautiful, but that feelings add color to our life. And life really would be boring if our emotions were just totally flatlined. You know, we'd lack passion and zest. And all of the range of emotions that we're capable of experience actually contribute to our human experience, but our essence, like our personality, our mood, our behavior, and motivation. So if everything was just flatlined, it would be, you know, pretty boring. And I think the other thing, as you're saying, and the main character, Riley, she was going through a pretty difficult adolescent stage, but she was also grappling with pretty heavy-duty loss, right? Her family moved away. And her reactions were pretty proportionate to that situation.
Mm-hmm. You know,
I think sometimes we have a heart, like we feel bad when we feel bad, but it's actually quite natural and human.
Yeah, I think balance clearly is good. What I see, though, in real life is a lot of people getting in a fearful state, and it actually prevents them from moving forward. You know, sort of false evidence appearing real. And sometimes these emotions can really get you stuck in life. It can keep you from reaching your highest and best. And what I would have liked to seen in the movie, some higher level type of thing for kids to, like, maybe have a character called awareness, you know, something that goes so high where it puts you more in control and to see a little bit clearly, because so many people are so fearful. You know, fear of success, fear of failure, and they don't go anywhere. They never reach their full potential. Can you comment on that?
I think it's an excellent point. I think that people get stuck so often because they don't know what to do with the complexity of our emotions. And like you said, it's almost safer just to stay put than to weed through it and make sense of it in new ways. And so I think that, you know, like you said, the awareness is a pivotal piece, right? If we're sort of more aware, again, that our reactions might be proportionate, they're natural, they're normal, if you will, but with a little bit of finesse, a little bit of work, we can navigate them in ways that end up being far more meaningful. And I think, you know, that speaks to just an element of being willing to take risks or to look at things through different lenses, too.
Well, would that have made the film, or would it be above the kid's head to put some higher level awareness in there to create sort of a really diminish the impact on emotions could have in an adverse effect?
Yeah, I think it's a great point. I think that in a sense, the whole film, I think, was raising awareness on some levels. But I think to take it further is helpful, you know, when children or any of the audience that watches it, you know, become more aware, because we know even as adults sometimes it's so tricky to figure it all out. But I think just, again, raising the awareness for them and for us means a great deal. And so, yeah, I mean, I think there's just such complexity to how our emotions are formed. And the thing is, emotions arouse us, right? So it starts to engage our amygdala in our brains. And that's the part that gets tricky, because sometimes it's hard to decipher, you know, to get ourselves back into a place where we can actually make sense of things and, you know, be more calm and be more centered. And that really can perpetuate, you know, some negative things instead of propelling us forward.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that was one of my, if you would say, negatives of the film, was I felt like when she got to that point of awareness, I don't want to be a spoiler alert, but when she got to that point of awareness and they had this pivotal moment in the film, it happened so quickly that I think they'd spent so much time on the sadness aspect and how horrible it is to lose all your emotion that when it all came back in balance, it was pretty quick, and then it was happy ending, da-da-da. You know what I'm saying? And so I felt like that almost made me nervous because I'm also a nurse, and it's like so many people, you know, do have problems with neurotransmitters and things like that, and they need to have pharmaceutical help at times. But the pharmaceutical help is a bridge in order, in my opinion, is in order to be able to do the work, to be able to get those emotions and understand where they're coming from and be able to deal with it. So those kind of help to level you out in order to be able to deal with the underlying issue as compared to that being the panacea. Am I off on that?
No, I love how you just framed that. I think it's a really important point. And again, you know, I think the common sentiment and the one that's easy for us to all take the bait on is, you know, that we always have to think positive, or that if we have a problem, we're just going to barrel through it and find the solution really quickly. I think our culture tells us that in a lot of ways. And instead, you know, we can remind ourselves that we don't always have to think positive or be happy. And as you said, there's sort of this complex interplay of our neurophysiological responses, cognitive, and just thinking about our environmental circumstances too. You know, for anyone that's ever had to move or gone through any kind of variation of a loss, which we all do all the time, life is always change and flux and coping with loss, you know that you can't just make your brain and your mind and your emotions switch gears quickly. It's a process. And I think that part is something that we do have to affirm and teach and help, you know, not only our children but ourselves know that, you know, it can take time. And sometimes, you know, when things get really discouraging, we have to just buy time. And a lot of my work is around, you know, how do you cope and how do you facilitate resilience? And what are some things you can do when you're feeling really stuck or when you're feeling like super anxious or depressed? You know, what are some things you could do in that moment to buy time and to at least, you know, maybe soothe yourself a little bit or just know that, again, it's natural. I think we fight ourselves too much on this and we don't realize that we're not machines and robots.
Mm-hmm. And I think also they touched upon how important communication amongst family is to say, hey, I'm sharing in these emotions. And they touched upon it. But again, I wish they'd expanded a little bit more on that. But how would you recommend for the parents out there or the families out there to be able to start that type of communication where it's a safe communication? It's safe to say what you're really feeling.
I think it's such an important question, and it's one that boils down very often to really effective communication strategies. And again, just what we've been talking about, like how do you remove some of that, like a, you know, feeling of being taboo or stigma or nervousness around broaching emotional subjects, but just knowing that, you know, kids in particular at different developmental stages are going to have challenges, and it's healthy and it's normal, and it means that they... You know, I think today, a lot of times as parents, we want to protect our kids and make everything okay and line everything up for them. And in the movie, you know, the mom was like, you know, almost telling the daughter that she couldn't have the emotions because they were already pretty saturated with their own. And so that kind of message can be very detrimental, obviously, to a child. But just, you know, again, how do you attend to that? How do you talk about and have transparent conversations at different stages of their lives and say, it's okay, we feel this way too, or, you know, it's okay that you're having an off day and, you know, we don't have to fix it for you, but just know that we care and we're here to listen and that it will get better. I think that hope part of knowing that something will shift in time is really helpful.
Yes, and I also believe that the movie, I know we're talking about a lot about parenting as well, because the movie does deal with a young girl, but, you know, I think the movie speaks to any age, you know, it speaks to our memories of our own childhood experiences, but I think that a lot of people just go through, you know, emotional experiences and how to deal with these emotions and stuff on a daily basis, regardless of how old you are, so I want to touch on that in just a moment, but I do want to remind our listeners that we are speaking with Northeastern University Behavioral Science Department Chair Kristen Lee Costa. Is it Costa or Costa? I'm sorry.
You got it. It's Costa.
Costa. Okay, great. So the movie does deal with, you know, adult emotions as well. But I know that you've got this book out, and I think it deals with stress, right?
That's right. It's called Reset, Make the Most of Your Stress. And my whole position, and again, this is a culmination of my life's work, but my position is that stress in a lot of ways can be a powerful teacher. It can help build grit and resilience, and it can give us a lot of momentum. It can influence our behavior in positive ways. But as we've been talking about, sometimes we're just so afraid of our emotions, and we'd rather shy away or just, you know, pretend they don't exist. But what we know is that we can actually leverage our powerful emotions, you know, to set goals, to reach goals. And most of us have a lot of difficult emotions we navigate, especially in today's, you know, whether we're parents or, you know, just in today's workforce, there's a lot of things that come at us. And as you've said, it's not just children dealing with loss and change and difficulty, but it's something we probably grapple with on a daily basis.
Definitely. I mean, because I know that when I was in high school and you know, just a kid, I used to get very anxious and stressed out over tests. I could prepare, you know, completely for these tests. I would always end up with 100% or whatever. I mean, because I'm a perfectionist at heart. But I would still get anxious, you know, leading up to that test. And I'm still like that. I still, you know, suffer from anxiety and stress on a daily basis if it's something important is coming up. So it's a very adult thing. That, you know, that we all deal with stress, fear, we have fears, we have, you know, sadnesses. I mean, so it is a very important topic. I do want to ask two other things. Kristen, did you like the film? Did you give it a thumbs up?
I give it a two thumbs up. I enjoyed it.
Woohoo!
Excellent. Very good. Very
and
good.
I think it just, it you know, it's a catalyst for conversations like this. So ultimately, that's a great thing.
True. And, you know, the thing that I really wanted to know, and this sounds overly simplified, but what are emotions? They're not like these little, they're not little things in our head. They're not like, the memories aren't little balls or anything like that, right? Could you kind of like help us understand what emotions and memories are inside of us?
Absolutely. So in psychology, it's defined, you know, a lot as a complex state of feeling. Mm-hmm. And what this state results in is physical changes, psychological changes, and those influence our thinking and behavior. So that then trickles down and relates to our temperament, our personality, our mood, our motivation, and then, as you mentioned, our memories. So as I was saying before, you know, our memories, you could think about them as like learning that happens over time. And then we're able to retrieve them. And when we're emotionally aroused, what happens is, again, it provokes a part of our brain known as the amygdala. Mm-hmm. And then that actually serves to boost our brain's memory-forming areas. So one way you could think about it is the stronger our emotional experiences, whether it's positive or negative, the stronger the memory will be. And these are actually called flashbulb memories for those psychology geeks like myself out there. but a great example of this is, like, if you were to survey Americans have been surveyed to ask if they remember where they were at the time of 9/11 when they first learned about it. Mm-hmm. And 95% of us remember exactly where we were. So the stronger the emotion, the stronger the memories are.
Good point.
And also sometimes if multiple areas of the brain are stimulated simultaneously, for instance, if there's a scent or something that we associate with that strong emotional memory, it can just re-smelling that can end up opening up the floodgates as well. The brain is an incredibly amazing, amazing, amazing organ.
Yeah, and I think it's great that, I mean, it's a strong emotion. It's not just, you know, fear. It could be positive emotions. It could be negative ones because, you know, a few weeks ago we were talking about our Disneyland memories. Mm-hmm. It's appropriate. And, you know, I talked about how I could place myself back there in It's a Small World because I was just so joyful. I was feeling Amy Poehler in that moment. And I mean, so it's so vivid in my memory, but then it's also works the same for some of the, I don't want to say negative emotions. How did I say it in my review? The unfavorable ones, the seemingly unfavorable ones. But
I love that. That's a great framing. And I love what you said a few moments too, just about the notion of getting, you know, nail biting during test taking moments and all of those things that we all wrestle with in our own ways. And, you know, that has to do more, just to kind of go along with the unfavorable emotions, mm-hmm. think of the difference between eustress and distress. So eustress can be used to elevate ourselves, elevate our senses, our focus, to perform well. So whether it's a test or a public speech or something like that, athletes know that they can harness eustress versus distress that becomes more disruptive to our process. So I think that's another piece when we try to, you know, unpack this complex puzzle as we try to put it together. You know, we have to understand that it has distinctive forces and influences.
And it sounds like your book is really discusses that, where how we can take the stresses that are there and try to harness them to use them to our benefit and not let them become detrimental to us.
That's right. And it goes back to your original thinking around awareness. Like, if we can just understand that, it's really freeing, you know, rather than fighting it, because, you know, we can disconnect from our emotions, but we know when people do that, it doesn't always have the best results. You know, we can kind of hide them. And I think that's a big thing that we often do when it comes to our emotions, is we're afraid to be authentic with them. We're afraid to be transparent. In the movie, Riley was hesitant to do that because of the messages she was getting. But when we're able to then process them and debrief them, it can mean a lot. It can really facilitate growth that we didn't think was possible when we were feeling stuck.
True. Excellent points. What a great discussion. Northeastern University Behavioral Science Department Chair Kristen Lee Costa. One more time, tell us about where we can get that book.
You can find it online on Amazon or any of the book outlets. Again, it's called Reset, Make the Most of Your Stress. And you can also go to reset24-7.com to learn more.
Excellent. Kristen, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your insight. And thank you so much for seeing the film as well and helping us, analyze this and tell Dave that he's wrong.
My pleasure. I hope you all have a terrific day.
Thanks, you too.
Thank you. Very cool. That was a great discussion.
Yeah, it was. It was an excellent discussion.
And I like what she said, because you know what? The kids that are going to this movie, they have to be driven there by their parents. Mm-hmm. What a great opportunity to have that open up the channels of discussion as you're talking about the movie. Like, what was your favorite part? What did you think about this? You can talk about that on your way home and maybe give that ability to talk about things and be a safe zone.
Yeah, and I think that John Lasseter actually calls Inside Out Pixar's most important film to date. We're going to hear a little bit about that, hopefully in our next segment if we have time. But before we get to that, John Goodman and Billy Crystal sing If I Didn't Have You from Monsters, Inc. I did not care for the first Monsters, Inc. I liked Monsters University, which we'll get to in our next hour. But I do love this song. It's probably my favorite song.
I like
song.
Mike and Sloan.
They're very lovable guys. I was waiting for you for that one, Greg.
Win the poll.
Do you want to sing this karaoke with me? If I was handsome,
no way it could happen.
Both dreams
do come true.
How can't you like the first Monster?
I didn't have nothing if I didn't have you. Come on.
Hit it.
I wouldn't have nothing. This is our second week in a row. John Goodman. Wouldn't have nothing.
That's John Goodman?
He's trying to do Elvis, or I don't know.
He's got
the lip going on.
Oh, the lip by Elvis Presley.
Yeah.
Oh.
Or I could do Billy Crystal.
You could do Billy.
I don't know the lyrics right now.
Do Howard Cosell.
Oh.
All right. I'll just do a break right now. This is Breakthrough Entertainment Live, 1480 AM, KPHX in Phoenix, Arizona. And the singing is by Joseph J.
I wouldn't have nothing if I didn't have you.
And we'll be right back.
New River singing.
You and me together. That's how it always should be. One without the other. Don't mean nothing to me. Nothing to